Sensor Man 1 delivering another episode for Hacker Public Radio. This is actually my fourth such episode. I kind of did this in reverse, as it is that I had been a guest of Distorted Science some time ago, and I had done Asterix Revolutionary Telephony Platform at the AstroCon, and I figured I'd come back and finally do a Linux how I found Linux or how I got into Linux. So here it goes. I came late to the PC game. I am not a traditional computer person per se. No computer science background. I am an autodidact, which is in a few words someone who learned by doing, as many of you probably are. I found my first computer, or rather got a hold of my first PC in 1995. In 94, I was exposed to the internet via NCSA Mosaic web browser, and of course the very robust, venerable Unix operating system was the introduction, or at least for me it was the internet, and for a lot of other people as well. And so, having come in contact with the Spark 1s, Spark 5s of the Sun OS fame, the now defunct Solaris, Sun Microsystems Corporation gave us those hardware platforms, which really stoked my interest in Unix. And as I mentioned earlier, it was the internet, and at that point the Wide World Web, which caught my fancy, and I really needed to have a lot more, or really want to get a lot more experience with Unix operating systems. So I needed to learn about file system management, ownership, file permissions. So when you copy things to doc root of a web page, and in those days everybody had the tilde and username, which is how students at school were able to have their own web pages. And so once I got my feet wet, if you will, in Unix operating system, I figured out that I needed to have it at home. And in those days, having a Spark at home was prohibitively expensive back in the circa 90s, what have you. It's very expensive. So there had to be some other way. And someone said, hey, you know what? You may want to consider using Linux. And I guess before I made that choice, and it was introduced to me, I had a PC at home in 95. Finally was able to get my hands on one, and the PC was of the Windows for workgroups 3.11, which was it was important to note in those days the Windows operating system was not a networked operating system. The company Microsoft had no clue that networking was important, or the internet for that matter was important. They were trying to put everybody in some sort of proprietary container like Prodigy, and those other people were doing it at the same time. And of course the AOL community was also doing at the same time. So there wasn't a lot of hope for me with Windows for networking 3.11. and so I just went ahead and took the advice of someone I was working with and picked up a book called Linux Unleashed. Linux Unleashed was a fantastic awakening for me, because it had the Slackware CD in there, version 2.00, I believe it was, with the 1.2.13 kernel. As I mentioned before, up until that time, my only way to work on a Unix-based operating system, or a Unix-like operating system, was to do this at school. And I would have to say that I experienced the Linux, or rather the Unix renaissance, at my alma mater, Florian University in Tallahassee. And it was there that many of my fellow classmates, fellow hackers, if you will, got their feet wet as well in the Unix, and I learned a lot from many of them that were there. And as a consequence, it then stoked my interest in learning Unix at home. And to do that, as I mentioned before, the only way to do that at that time was getting yourself into Linux. So I got the book Linux Unleashed, opened it up, and I was the one geek walking around with a fat 360-page, maybe 400-page document. It looked almost like a dictionary. I had it on my arm and walked all over the place with that. I read it. I got involved in it, immersed myself in it. The most difficult thing for me at the time to learn was interpreting chat scripts. The chat script in those days were used to communicate with the dial-up modems that were prevalent. In fact, I had a Robotics 14.4 kilobaud, I believe it is, modem that we used, and the chat scripts were, the PPP chat scripts, excuse me, were designed to communicate with the modems. I think I use, it wasn't Kermit, well, I did use Kermit, but in this particular case, I used a NCursus-based application that allowed me to communicate with the modem itself. And I can't remember that at the moment. Once I do, I'll put it in the show notes. But essentially, that application allowed me to communicate with the modem, and it was probably the most difficult thing for me to comprehend at the time, and how those chat scripts worked. It was like magic. But they did work eventually, and I was able to connect to the internet and actually start browsing the web from home on a different operating system. At the time, I was still dual booting, because I thought that I needed that other operating system on my computer to do other work. At the time, the application features, or rather the availability of whole applications, different distributions, were smaller then, and they weren't always as compatible. So you might need to have certain things where like an Office suite, or you might need to have some other application. So I did some dual booting. It wasn't until much later that I started getting into this thing called virtual machines, and I think there was sometime in like 99 I got my copy of VMware 1.0, and it was horribly slow because it was mismanaged in those days, and it was in its nascent form, where virtual management or virtual machines took up so much memory. And in those days, memory was not inexpensive, and it was something that people tried desperately to preserve in the mid to late 90s. So it was a tough order. So out of that whole interest in Linux at home, I learned a little bit about networking, because obviously at the time I had one desktop, because it was pretty expensive for me to put together another box. But ultimately, I needed to learn how to do some networking if I wanted to have other machines on the network, or have an understanding of how to get two computers to talk to each other. And so, of course, as I mentioned, in those days, we had Windows computers, and it wasn't until much later that those Windows computers, and I say much later, probably in the late 90s, that those Windows computers began to get networked, and to not only network amongst themselves from computer to computer, but also getting them out onto the internet. So when Windows NT 4.0 came into being, it was a much more polished type of experience if you were talking about a Windows machine, if you want to call it polished. I think Windows NT took a page out of the BSD stack. I think they took the TCP/IP stack from BSD, if I wasn't mistaken. Someone might have more accuracy experience than I do, but I thought that was the case. But anyway, I began to work with NT and something called the Yellow Pages and NIS to get these Solaris machines to network with these Windows NT machines in labs and such, so they could talk to each other and authenticate the users that might sit down at those Windows computers to authenticate themselves to the rest of the network. So fast forward a little bit, the Linux experience got me interested in networking, and as a consequence, I could take that knowledge that I experimented with at home, bring it back to the labs at school, and people were pretty happy with that knowledge that I had, and I became one of the people that others would seek out for advice on how networking should work. It was funny, it wasn't like all of the students were interested in YP and NIS. That was more of a job that I created for myself working with some professors at school. The students were more so interested in dial-up networking with Windows computers and the awful, you know, networking stack that was WinSock that Microsoft had. And it was NetBuoy and crap like that. Those are the things that students were interested in getting to work, not so much the underpinnings of it, but just getting the damn thing to dial and connect to the rotary system at school. So I ended up getting free meals. I ended up getting a little cash, you know, a little music for some mixtapes that I would I would buy and, you know, do that sort of thing on campus. And so it became worth my while to really learn how to get the stuff working for people so that, you know, they could connect. So we talked about the chat strips, we talked about WinSock, we talked about NetBuoy, things like that. Eventually, I began to, as I was working with Slackware at home, I eventually began to branch into something called Red Hat 4.2. I actually set that up for some people at school. I did some work for some professors with 4.2. That was actually the platform where I installed YP or the Yellow Pages NIS for this authentication assignment that I had. And we did the authentication. We could actually tie in the print quotas and such like that for each individual lab, because I think the overall problem we were trying to solve was to stop people from stealing our paper or wasting paper as they were, you know, working the lab in the midnight hours. We needed to figure out who was in there, what they were doing, and how much of the paper they were using, because the print quota was very important. So Red Hat 4.2 was a platform that the professor wanted me to use, and that's what I learned. So I got a chance to learn not only Slackware, but I got a chance to learn Red Hat as well. Fast forward 2001, 2003, I started to learn a little bit about Debian. I got involved with Debian on a humble, so to speak. My first Debian distribution was Potato, I believe it was, and I would later use Debian as some business deployments, which I use now as a consultant for small to medium-sized businesses, primarily independent healthcare professionals. I deploy web services on Debian these days, OpenVPN for authentication and data encryption, and also file management services, back office services like Samba and things of that nature. That's my holy trinity, if you will, you know, OpenVPN, Samba, and those types of things, working together with, of course, Apache and your LAMP stack. Pretty robust solution to provide. I would, of course, use Slackware for those things as well, but I think for some people, they would rather me use Debian only because it's easier for them to deploy packages, so on and so, quote unquote, as they would think. And I'm not going to get into the to dependency management. I never have a problem with it, but for others that deploy it, they would tend to use apt-get more so than trying to understand things like SBOPG or, you know, Slack builds, stuff like that. That's a whole nother discussion. But anyway, I'm not much of distribution jumper. Slackware has been my distribution of choice, and it will continue to be that for my home use. And I'm not ashamed of that, because I love Slackware, and it's done a lot for me, taught me a lot about the Unix operating system per se, or at least it's the most Unix-like operating system, Linux distribution that you can find, in my opinion. And it's taught me a lot. I owe a great debt to Patrick and, of course, this rest of the Slackware team that has taught me so much over the years. These days, the only other distribution I may play with would be CentOS, because I run Asterisk on that in full deployment. I also run Asterisk on OpenBSD at home. I have delved a bit into Arch, because the latest one of the Myth TV distributions runs on Arch. It used to be not Myth, but now it's an Arch-based distribution that I might use. And pretty much that is my experience. That has been my experience. Networking is something that I really enjoy. Heterogeneous networks is the norm these days, so you have to be able to speak all kinds of protocols. And the Linux operating system has taught me much about networking and the ability to get computers to do what you want from a networking perspective. I'm not much of a scripter. I just hack at it and get things to work the way I need. But like I said earlier, Unix was the thing that got me interested in going the step further and finding Linux as an option. And Linux became a lot to me in terms of helping me with school, in terms of getting money in my pocket, getting me food in my belly, all that good stuff. So that pretty much is my story of how I came to Linux, or how I discovered Linux. I want to thank Ken Fallon, Dan Washko, and Klaatu for inspiring me to tell this particular story. And I encourage others to submit their how I got to Linux, or how I got introduced to Linux stories. I do find them interesting. Submit, if you can't submit that type of discussion or show, submit any show of your choosing, because we are running low on shows and Hacker Public Radio is a great service to the community. So I thank everyone for listening. Until next time, Sons of Man.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.